You're listening to Chemistry in Its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
For Chemistry in Its Element this week, can you guess what connects boat keels, armour-piercing weaponry, beautiful coloured glass that you can track down with a Geiger counter, and more oxidation states than a chemist can shake a glass rod at? If not, here's Polly Arnold with the answer.
Uranium. Uranium is certainly one of the most famous, or perhaps I should say infamous, elements. It is the heaviest naturally occurring element. It is actually more abundant in the Earth's crust than silver. It is one of eight elements named in honour of celestial objects. But you might not think that uranium deserves to be named after the planet Uranus. The lustrous black powder that the chemist Klaproth isolated from the mineral pitchblende in 1789, just 8 years after Uranus was discovered, was in fact an oxide of uranium. 52 years later, Eugène Melchior Pelligot reduced uranium tetrachloride with potassium. From these harsher conditions, he obtained the pure silvery-white metal at last. Samples of the metal tarnish rapidly in air, but if the metal is finely divided, it will burst into flames. Uranium sits amongst the actinides, the second shell of metals, to fill their F orbitals with valence electrons, making them large and weighty. But it doesn't deserve its image as one of the periodic table's nasties. Chemically, uranium is fascinating. Its nucleus is packed full of protons and neutrons and draws the core electron shells in close. This means relativistic effects come into play to change the orbital energies. The inner core S electrons move faster and are drawn in to the heavy nucleus, shielding it better. This shielding of the nucleus allows the outer valence orbitals to expand. They can now combine to form hybrid orbitals that are not possible for lighter elements. This generated arguments over the precise ordering of the electrons in the uranyl iron until as recently as this century. I'll come to the uranyl iron in a moment. So, now a wide variety of orbitals can be used to make bonds, and from these, some very interesting compounds. In the absence of air, uranium can display a wide range of oxidation states, unlike the lanthanides just above it. Because of this, some regard it as a big transition metal. And it forms many deeply coloured compounds. The uranium tetrachloride that Pelligot reduced is a beautiful grass-green colour, while the triiodide is midnight blue. The relativistic effects on bonding have generated much excitement for us synthetic chemists, but they also have generated many headaches. They make it hard for both experimental and computational chemists to understand how best to deal with our nuclear waste legacy. In the environment, uranium invariably exists as a dioxide salt called the uranyl iron that I mentioned earlier. The metal is tightly sandwiched between two oxygen atoms and in its highest oxidation state. Uranyl salts are notoriously unreactive at the oxygen atoms, and more than half of all known uranium compounds contain this dioxo motif. Outside the chemistry lab, uranium is best known for its role as a nuclear fuel. To make this, naturally occurring uranium, which is almost all U-238, is enriched with the isotope U-235, which is normally only present in about 0.7%. The leftovers, called depleted uranium, or DU, have a much reduced uranium-235 content. DU is 40% less radioactive than natural uranium, and the material that we use to make compounds from in the lab. Because it is so dense, DU is also used in shielding, in the keels of boats, and more controversially, in the noses of armour-piercing weapons. The metal has the desirable ability to self-sharpen as it pierces a target, rather than mushrooming upon impact the way conventional tungsten carbide-tipped weapons do. Critics of DU weaponry claim it can accumulate around battlefields. Because uranium is primarily an alpha emitter, its radioactivity only really becomes a problem if it gets inside the body, where it can damage the kidneys. However, uranium is also a heavy metal, and its chemical toxicity can be of greater importance. It is approximately as toxic as lead or mercury. The reputation of this element would also be better if uranium glass was the element's most publicly known face. In the same way that lead salts are added to glass to make sparkling crystal glassware, Urinal salts give a very beautiful and translucent yellow-green colour to glass, although over the centuries, glassmakers have experimented to produce a wide range of gem-like colours. Throughout the 19th and early 20th century, it was used widely in containers and wine glasses. If you think that you own a piece, you can check with a Geiger counter, or by looking for the characteristic green fluorescence of the uranium when held under a UV lamp. Pieces are generally regarded as safe to drink from, but you are advised not to drill holes in them or wear them. Fair enough.
Or inadvertently eating it too, presumably. That was Edinburgh University chemist Polly Arnold explaining the softer side of the armour-piercing element uranium. Next week, Andrea Seller will be introducing us to some crystals with intriguing properties.
It's amazing stuff. You have to see this.
He pulled out of his pocket a sample vial containing some stunning pink crystals that glinted alluringly.
Wow, I said.
You can always impress a chemist with nice crystalline products.
It gets better, he said mysteriously.
He beckoned me into a hallway.
Look,
he said. As the crystals caught the light from the new fluorescent lamps hanging from the ceiling, the pink color seemed to deepen and brighten up.
Wow, I said again.
We moved the crystals back into the sunlight, and the color faded again. And moving the crystals back and forth, they glowed and dimmed in magical fashion.
But what did they contain? Well, the answer's erbium, and you can hear all about it in next week's Chemistry in Its Element. I'm Chris Smith, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Chemistry in Its Element is brought to you by the Royal Society of Chemistry and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information and other episodes of Chemistry in Its Element on our website at chemistryworld.org/elements.